Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
Welcome, everybody. I'm delighted to be here. My name is Stephen Saunders. I go by Steve. I am a psychologist. I have a doctorate in clinical psychology. I am a professor at Marquette University, which is in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where the weather is very terrible right now. And I've been at Marquette since 1994 with specialty in clinical psychology, which is the diagnosis and treatment of mental illness.
So can you talk to, because we have a lot of teachers here, we have a lot of students here, as you know, can you talk to the teachers and students about sharing their feelings, about the students sharing their feelings with their teachers, with their parents when it comes to bullying? They deal with depression and anxiety, and why it's important to have open lines of communication.
Well, it is important. In the adolescent years, in the ages 12 through 18, even maybe a little bit past that, it's difficult for adolescents to share what they're thinking and how they're feeling. And trust me, teachers and parents don't want to know everything that you're doing. So keep that to yourself. But it's difficult because adolescence is literally defined as a time period of life where we figure out who we are and how we want to present ourselves to the world. And it takes some time to realize that when I feel depressed or anxious, that's really not all that different than how millions of other people are currently feeling and have felt over, since the beginning of mankind. Depression, anxiety are the two most common types of mental health problems or emotional disorders, mental illness, if you prefer. They can lead to problems at school, problems in relationships, problems with self-concept, problems in that developing identity. So as you're developing, you don't want to share your flaws. You want people to think well of you. If you're a normal person, you worry about how people think about you. If you're normal, you worry about that. But there's maybe excess or exaggerated worry about that, from about, age 14 through 18, that's perfectly normal. So again, it's important to understand that feeling anxious, even feeling depressed, especially if it's serious, this is nothing necessarily unusual, and something that every older person that you know, especially teachers, and it might alarm your parents quite a bit if you acknowledge this to them, but the teachers have seen it before, maybe have dealt with it before in their life. As you get older, you realize this is pretty common and you develop strategies and ideas about how to help, and would love to be able to help to the extent that we can. Help might mean just simply reassuring that how you're feeling is normal. Help might mean something more than that, which is helping the student to figure out where to get more formal help from a doctor, a counselor, a pediatrician, a psychiatrist, a school counselor, whatever. Because if a problem is serious enough, then it probably does need some professional intervention. And so I'm talking about two different types of help. The one is we help to the extent that we can. Teachers will do that, but also the help in realizing, this is pretty serious. And maybe talking with parents and with you about, where to get further help. So it is, to answer the question directly, it won't surprise or embarrass us or make us uncomfortable or make us think differently about a student if the student were to open up about being anxious and depressed or depressed or both. And in fact, would like you to, so that we can offer you whatever help that we can.
And you talk about those open lines of communication. And do you recommend any, do you know of any resources that are out there that can help teachers support their students offhand?
There's so much online. It's really, I would be, if you were to Google adolescent at depression, anxiety, helping, you know, school, I mean, all five words, you probably come up with 10 million pages. The governments around the world have recommended pages. There are lots of school organizations that support schools that have lots and lots of information. The primary thing that I would simply recommend would be just the attitude that teachers take when they're in front of students and talking individually with students, both in front of the classroom, but also when a student might approach you, which is to be very accepting. To say what I just said, don't necessarily have to talk about your own struggles with mental health issues, but I often talk about this third person. You know, I know this guy who has had depression and anxiety, and therapy really helped. I can go to counseling, of course, as you might guess, I'm talking about myself. But I don't, you know, that could complicate things for students if they, you know, for a teacher to say that it's really not necessary, but rather you do know mental illness, mental health problems affect 1 in 5 persons in any given year. This darn pandemic that we've been enduring has actually increased the rates, and especially increased the rates among students, the rates of, you know, just because of the stress of their families, the stress of having to maybe learn online, the stress of not being able to see their friends as often. So really increased, exacerbated rates of anxiety and depression. So for you to take the very realistic and compassionate and kind attitude, there's nothing to be ashamed of here. And you know, it would be silly for someone to walk into your classroom with a broken arm and be ashamed to say, yeah, my arm really hurts. And if they were to do that, you know, they wouldn't do that. If you were to find out someone had a broken arm, you would, of course, send them for care and you would express sympathy to them. We really must start to talk about mental health problems in the same way. This is not weakness. This is not something bad about you. This is not something unusual about you. And please come forward so that we can get you the help that you need. Specific help, I think reaching out to local resources, working with school counselors, asking other teachers what resources they use. And again, there's quite a bit online for teachers in particular about this topic.
And guys, thank you I've gotten some questions emailed to me, and feel free to message them in the chat. But one of the people, they wanted to know, as the chair and professor at Marquette University, how have you seen the stigma behind mental health change over the years? Has it gotten better or worse in your opinion?
Well, that actually is a special research interest of mine, stigma of mental illness. And the reason it's a special interest of mine is because if you look at the numbers, they're sort of astonishing. I gave you one of the numbers, 1 in 5 persons, that's 20%. That's 20 out of 100 students are experiencing at some point in the year mental health problems. It's about 16 out of 100 right now. In a lifetime, it's going to be 1 in 3, as many as 1 in 2 persons will have a mental health issue, a mental illness, diagnosable. Lots of other persons have what is referred to as subclinical, or not quite serious enough to be a diagnosable mental illness. But this is the kid whose parents divorced, or who is being bullied at school, or who had to move because parent got a new job and doesn't have many friends yet. So the 20% doesn't include those, I would say, another 20%. So But of the 20% that have a diagnosable mental illness, less than half get formal treatment for it. And of those who get formal treatment, less than half see a mental health professional. And being a psychiatrist, a psychologist, being someone who actually knows how to help a person with mental illness, a mental health professional. The reason that people don't do that, again, no one, you know, I broke my collarbone once because I did something very foolish. And when people asked me how I broke my collarbone, I told them about the thing that I did, which was so very foolish. And they laughed and I laughed and they called me an idiot. And I said, you're right. And then we continued. But there, you know, there's no stigma about having an accident, but there's such tremendous stigma, misplaced stigma. It's misinformation, it's disinformation, it's lack of information that causes people to not understand and to think badly about mental illness and about persons with mental illness. The general stigma is, you know, the most common is probably weakness. You know, the person is not strong enough psychologically, emotionally, not strong enough spiritually to not become sad or depressed. Simply not true. And we don't say that about other illnesses, but somehow we say this about mental illness. And we need to address this explicitly, directly. We, you know, how many jokes do we have about persons with mental illness? How many terms do we have for persons with mental illness? Crazy, insane, lunatic. We don't do this for any other illness. And so we grow up in society, potentially in a family where mental health problems are scorned and mocked and looked down on. Now, I develop a mental illness. I'm not willing to share with anyone what I'm going through because of that fear of stigma. And I stigmatize myself. I think about myself as being weak, myself as being bad. Somehow I did something wrong, but I deserve this. These are things that need to be explicitly addressed and talked about. Maybe not a conversation with students because they've never had this conversation before and they might be nervous about opening up about this, but leading a discussion about this, and I've done this dozens and dozens of times in my own classes, leading a discussion about why do people think this way about mental illness? Mental illness is the most common illness on the planet. Mental depression itself has been called the common cold of mental illness, meaning it's about as common as the common cold. So stigma is a huge issue and it interferes with people getting the help they need. It interferes with people asking for help from their teachers and from a valued adult, someone that they trust. So we need to do what is referred to as outreach, which is a term you've probably heard. We need to reach out to these students and say to them, this is a safe place for you to talk about this because I don't endorse the stigmatizing thoughts and thus feelings that people have towards mental illness. I understand it better. I'm smarter than that, and we should all be smarter than that, is something that I would encourage people to say to students.
That's unfortunate. And you know, again, we can't thank you enough for joining us and talking about that and opening up this conversation. I've had a number of questions emailed and both messaged to me by a number of different teachers as well as students. So I'm going to try and make these as concise as possible. Can you talk on the importance of having open lines of communication and validating feelings when teachers are talking with students about this stuff or vice versa?
So if you are respectful and kind, and especially if you listen, the lines of communication will open up. I like the expression, God gave us two ears and one mouth, and we should listen twice as much as we talk. I've never taken that advice myself, but nonetheless, it's good advice, especially when someone is approaching you with something. And The open line of communication, another thing that is very useful, very effective, is simply to say back to the person what you heard them say. refer to that as reflection. It's like a mirror. You reflect back verbally what you've heard them say. Non-judgmental is extremely important. With regard to feelings, feelings are, we don't say that feelings are incorrect, but we do recognize that feelings are a result of the way someone thinks. If I think that my wife is angry at me, I'm going to feel nervous. I'm going to feel potentially angry. If I, you know, she's angry, she's mad at me for something I don't deserve, that makes me mad. But in fact, she's not mad at me. I was thinking the wrong thought, but that wrong thought led to the feeling of defensiveness or nervousness or anger. Feelings are due to the way we think. We don't say that someone's feelings are not legitimate, but we do say that the way someone is thinking, which is causing them to feel depressed or anxious, is potentially not correct. I feel sad. I feel depressed because nobody likes me. I've had hundreds of clients say that to me. Hundreds of patients say that to me in psychotherapy. And my response is to listen and say, it sounds like you feel sad. It sounds like you think no one likes you. And then work our way around to saying, basically, no, it's not true that no one likes you. At least it's, at least I like you. And by the way, your wife probably likes you. And by the way, the friends that you go out with like you. But you're saying this to yourself, leading yourself to feel this way. Again, feelings are based on how we think. And sometimes our thoughts are right and we should feel sad. The earthquake the recent earthquake should make people sad and shocked. And because that thought is true and those feelings are legitimate. But with mental health issues, especially anxiety and depression, the ultimate example being someone with schizophrenia whose brain is not working quite right, who thinks to himself, other people are trying to hurt me, which is not true, but thus feels paranoid. So thoughts and feelings are related. We're very respectful and we try to empathize with and we try to reflect and be open about the way someone is feeling. But if you have a student saying to you, I'm depressed, you can almost guess what they are thinking, which is, I'm no good. I'm not smart enough. I'm not talented enough. Nobody likes me. And you can help them to realize, no, actually, you're quite a lovely person. I'm glad to be your teacher. And I'm sorry that you feel so sad, but do realize that you're thinking these things is not correct.
So would you say that's more along the lines when you're, so say I'm a teacher and a student comes to me with, they're talking about upsetting stuff and how depressed they are, the stuff that you talked, like the self-loathing, is there a massive importance on not only validating feelings and listening, but also remaining positive the entire time?
I think so. And I don't think it's wrong to, we don't say, you're wrong to feel that way. We say, I understand that you feel that way. But I'm wondering, and then when we get to some of the thoughts that people are having that might be associated with their depression or their anxiety, we can say, I don't agree with you. I've seen other kids, I've heard other teachers, I've heard other kids talking about you, and you are really well liked, you're really well respected. And it's unfortunate that you are thinking that, because I think that's affecting how you are feeling. But we're at the same time, we need to be very, very aware that a lot of kids have been through a lot recently, again, with this darn pandemic, but also things at home. We might not always understand how things are going at home. They might come from a very difficult situation where parents are always fighting, or there's a divorce, or maybe even violence in the home. Parents struggling with employment, parents struggling with their own mental illness. You're familiar, I hope, I'm assuming very familiar with the term adverse childhood experiences, the so-called ACEs, and so many, and ACEs, we you know, the original study was of adults who had ACEs in their childhood and it affects them as adults. Well, it's pretty easy to extend ACEs, the literature from adults, to current kids and that what kids, our children, are going through right now. So we're very, very, we try to be very sensitive to what they are going through, help them to the extent that it is possible, you know, referring them for further assistance if there are situations at home that are dangerous or ongoing trauma. But if it's, you know, but at school and when talking to them about their feelings, someone who is feeling anxious, if thoughts and feelings are so closely related that you will continuously hear people use the terms interchangeably. Someone says, I feel like I'm a failure. They're actually saying, I think I'm a failure. But you know from what they said, I feel like I'm a failure, how they are actually feeling, which is very sad and very anxious about themselves. And if you start to pay attention to people using feel when they mean think, they don't tend to say, I think I'm depressed, or they might say that. They don't, I think depressed, rather, I think people don't like me and I feel depressed. We know they're so closely related, we can almost guess the one from the other. So what I'm trying to try to unconfuse what I just said, deconfuse what I just said, there are some very real tragic situations, and we want to acknowledge, respect, and try to address those with the child to the extent that we can, to with the student to the extent that we can. But many times those situations lead to other thinking, such as, I'm being treated this badly at home because I deserve it. And of course, everyone in the room here would think to themselves about any child, no child deserves to be treated badly. You are being treated badly, which is sad, but don't compound that with thinking that you're to blame. And so understanding depression, anxiety due to circumstances, due to the way people think, and we can help them think more realistically, think more kindly about themselves and potentially help them with depression, anxiety.
This is all incredible stuff. Again, I have another question that kept coming up both in the emails and the messages. So I'll try and make this concise, because I know we have a few more questions, then we'll let you go, because we have students and teachers all over the world. We know it's getting kind of late in Eastern Europe. So one of our teachers, they wanted to know, do you have any recommendations for teacher, parents, and students to work together to solve any problems when it comes to something that is upsetting a child?
The recommendation is for parents and teachers to be in communication. If a teacher, something bad happens at school that's upsetting to the child, whatever medium is most effective or efficient, just to send the parent a text, this happened. If you want to talk about it, let me know. You have to limit, of course, how much time you can dedicate to anything like that. But likewise for parents to teachers, so that parents can anticipate that their child is going to be upset and have some understanding as to why, but also so that you, the teachers, can maybe adjust expectations based on, knowing that, their grandmother was just put back in hospital with her breast cancer, or that best friend in the neighborhood just moved away and is very upsetting, or they broke up with their girlfriend or boyfriend, which is very upsetting. So that stressful life events are called that because they're stressful, knowing that a child is upset about something, knowing that a student is upset about something, can be very useful from both ends. So just keeping the communication open about that, and how to do that. I think to introduce such an idea to parents at the beginning of the school year, I'd like to be able to have an open line of communication with you. how would that best work? And by the way, I'd also like to, in addition to keeping track of homework assignments and how they're doing in school, be really useful for me to understand anything that might be going on at home, that, you know, whether sudden or chronic, whether it's ongoing or something suddenly that happened, that would be useful for me to understand, and maybe give the student a little bit of grace, a little bit more room at school, or to just, you know, give a kind smile, which, you know, kind smiles and simple acts of kindness like that are so hugely impactful. As Maya Angelou said, I don't always remember what people have said to me, but I always remember how they treated me.
That's a mantra that I've always had. And I know a lot of other teachers here probably have their entire careers. So we'll go with two more questions, then we'll let you go. So can you speak, and this goes out to the students, because I know we have some students on here, about the importance of limiting screen time and the importance of physical activity and all that?
Yes, the screens are not going away. And there's so many good things about screens. The danger for screens comes in when you rely on them more than you rely on face-to-face. Research is actually pretty clear that with adolescents in particular, screen time is bad if the student, the adolescent, spends more time on screen than with it, than face-to-face with people. So that's kind of the summary of it. You treat it as something to supplement your social life. Supplement meaning like like taking a vitamin in the morning, or, you know, it's not something that you need. It's a supplement. It's not vital. Without this, you're going to, you know, disappear or die. Rather, this is just something supplemental. This is screen time, social media, social interactions through virtual means is a fine supplement to your social life. But the most important aspect of your social life is and always will be face-to-face.
That's wonderful advice. And before we let you go, Dr. Saunders, is there any advice that you could give to these students and teachers before we let you go on the importance of open lines of communication? Anything you haven't touched on or maybe want to reiterate?
For the students, the most important resource your friends have is you. And your attitude towards them is really important. It's really important for their well-being, for their emotional well-being. Just as I gave some advice earlier to the teachers in the room, for you yourself to understand, to have some sympathy and some understanding for yourself if you're going through anxiety or depression, if there's a tough situation at home that you're dealing with, to show yourself some grace, to show yourself some kindness, and to do the same for your friends as well. You know how your friends are doing better than your teachers know how your friend is doing. And you can treat your friends with extra kindness when they're going through something difficult. And I know all of you do that. But also maybe take the courage to stand up for someone who is being made fun of or bullied. Or if you can't quite do that, to approach them later and say, "I'm sorry that happened," and come and sit with me at lunch or whatever that is. But also, you know, to look out for each other. And if you can't quite do it yourself, to approach the teacher and say, "Hey, I'm worried about Mary. I'm worried about John." And because I heard him say this, and I know he's going through this. So, and teachers, to given everything that I've just said, recognize that you're not Superman, Superwoman. You are not capable of doing everything. That would put a huge burden on yourself. That at the same time, never lose sight of how important simple acts of kindness and smiles and notes and compliments. They don't necessarily never lose sight of how extraordinarily powerful those are. You've had students graduate from your classes, and you were your favorite. You were their favorite teacher, and you never knew it. You didn't even know that they knew who you were, but you were their favorite teacher because of how you treated them. And so, there's a lot going on, especially with this darn pandemic that disrupted so much, especially so much of our young people's lives, and they're frightened. It's okay to be frightened. They're maybe sad. It's okay to be sad. They're maybe angry, and it's okay to be angry about what's going on. All of these things are okay. When it becomes serious enough, mental health problems become mental illness. You're not the person that's going to be able to help. You can help by maintaining a sensible, kind, compassionate classroom, and that will help a great deal. You might be the one time during a student's day that they have some respite from the stress that they're under. But don't take upon yourself the burden of trying to cure someone of serious depression or anxiety. And lastly, look out for each other. Look out for each other, support each other in this. In the same way that I suggested that the students support each other.
It's wonderful, wonderful life-lasting advice. And Dr. Saunders, we can't thank you enough for spending time with us today. Before I end the meeting for all, before I let everyone go turn off the Zoom, I'm going to allow everyone to unmute. Can we all say thank you to Dr. Saunders for taking time out of his valuable day to come talk to you guys about these issues? Thank you so much, Dr. Saunders.
Thank you,
Dr. Saunders.
Thank you.
Thank you.